I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. 2 weeks ago, the New York Times Magazine ran a cover story called The Tragedy of Baltimore, How an American City Falls Apart. I spoke with the author of that article, Alec McGillis, last week. Today, the conversation continues. Joining me, Bishop Douglas Miles, co-founder of BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development. BUILD's Turnaround Tuesdays is helping to put people back to work. Kirby Fowler, the president of the Downtown Baltimore Partnership, has issued a report showing positive trends in business and residential development. And Al Hutchinson, the president and CEO of Visit Baltimore, reports that tourism is up. So let's talk Baltimore, hun. Did the New York Times get it right? What does Baltimore get right? First, the news. Good afternoon and welcome. Hope you had a good weekend. Thanks for joining me for Midday. I'm Tom Hall. 2 weeks ago, a controversial article appeared in the New York Times Magazine called The Tragedy of Baltimore, How an American City Falls Apart. It was written by longtime Baltimore resident and award-winning journalist Alec McGillis. The article painted a grim picture of our city and what we've been through in the years since the violence and uprising that followed the death of Freddie Gray in police custody 4 years ago. I spoke with Alec McGillis about the piece the week before last, and even before Alec and I went on the air, I received several emails from some of the city's prominent civic leaders taking issue with Alec's summary of our recent and less recent history and for what he did not include in his reporting. So today we want to continue the conversation about that article and where we've been and where we're headed in Baltimore. Al Hutchinson is president and CEO of Visit Baltimore. He's responsible for the city's convention and tourism industry. Al, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom.
Kirby Fowler is president of the Downtown Baltimore Partnership, which works with businesses, residents, and community groups to advance the city's quality of life and attract new investment. Kirby, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Bishop Douglas Miles led the Koinonia Baptist Church for many years until handing the pastoral duties over of that congregation to his son, the Reverend Dante Miles. Bishop Miles was a founding member of BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development, where he serves as a co-chair. He's been an activist in the community for more than 50 years. Bishop Miles, good to see you, sir.
Good to be here.
So listeners, what do you think? Did the Times get it right? Is our city falling apart? What about what Baltimore gets right? What's working in our city as we address the challenges that many other cities face as well? You are welcome to join our conversation. We'll take your phone calls a little bit later. For the moment, you can drop us an email, midday@wypr.org. You can send us a tweet @midday@WYPR. You can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page where we are streaming our conversation live. So let's start by going around the table. And Al Hutchinson, I'd like to start with you and just get your general reaction to this piece in the New York Times. It certainly has gotten a lot of buzz.
Sure. Thanks, Tom. Thanks for inviting me to the show. First thing I would just say is the article was well written. A lot of research, great research was done. And for the most part, I think Alex is telling that part of Baltimore, which is a really true part of the history of Baltimore, and it's a part of our struggle as an urban hub. And I would just say that that story has some similar references in other urban hubs around the country. This is my sixth city doing what I do, and I've seen some of this in other communities. So I would just say that that is a part of the Baltimore story, no question about it. My job, however, is to tell the other part of the story, which is all the good things that are happening, the great work that's going on. Several folks here today are doing some of that great work. So that's really where I try to focus our attention as an organization, try to focus our attention in driving visitation, driving conventioneers, are all the positive gems and all the great work that's happening in the great city of Baltimore.
And Kirby Fowler, obviously, you know, when any of us who've lived here for a long time read something like that, you just cringe. You mean you say, oh, yeah, they got 4 million readers of the New York Times and they're reading that.
Sure. I actually came from New York City 28 years ago to Baltimore. So I've definitely cringed and I felt defeated. But after I stepped back and I read the article, as Al recognized, I thought it was correct in many respects. The police department needs to be rebuilt. There's dysfunction and distrust that led to the Freddie Gray unrest. We need better policing. So I completely recognize that. However, there were 8,600 words, which was fantastic. It's great for the New York Times to give that much coverage to any city. 150 of the words were about the positive things happening in Baltimore. And that's where I take issue, because Alec McGillis, who's a fantastic writer, he said office buildings were being converted. He used past tense, like everything stopped in 2015. But after the Freddie Gray unrest, even a few months after that, there was an auction for a building called the Appraisers Building at Lombard and Light Streets. And eight bidders bid on that building. This was just a couple months after Freddie Gray unrest. But 29 major projects have come since 2015, and the residential employment numbers continue to improve downtown. But those stories don't get told as much.
And Bishop Miles, you've been here a long time. You've been part of this community for longer than any of us, the rest of us at this table. When you read it, did it resonate as true to you? And but did it also resonate as incomplete?
It resonated as incomplete. Certain portions of it definitely are true about Baltimore. But I think what was basically missing is the resiliency of the people, that Baltimore is a city that continues to move despite all the problems that it faces. I think it also let the corporate community off the hook quite a bit for what it's not doing and the overall leadership of the city.
The political leadership of the city.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And Al Hutchinson, give us a little thumbnail sketch of the stats about visitors coming to Baltimore since the unrest. I remember in the year after, 1 year after the violence, I asked the guys who were, or this was 6 months after the violence, I asked the guys who were organizing the Baltimore Marathon what the response was in that year. And they said that registrations were down. But by the next year, they were back to where they had been. And in fact, they have been growing ever since. When you know, we were in the spotlight for those horrible weeks in April of 2015, what happened to tourism then? And then what's happened in the totality of the 4 years since?
So to give the real proper context prior to 2015, because I think that's extremely important, Baltimore's tourism industry was tracking extremely well. Everything was up. Occupancy was up. Average daily rate was up. April 15 happened, and we took a hit. We took a hit tremendously, and our sales teams has been working diligently at reversing those numbers. And so last year, 2018, we did make some comeback. About 26 million people visited the city of Baltimore. Over $700 million in taxes were collected, both state and city taxes. Revenue from tourism just in Baltimore City was almost $300 million. So tourism is moving in a positive direction. We have a lot of work to do. Hotel occupancy is still low. It's tracking a little higher than what it is nationally, but we're at 63%, which is not acceptable. It's not acceptable for the hotel community. It's not acceptable for tourism. So we're working really hard at continuing to improve our storytelling, because that's part of what we need to do, and to enhance that storytelling to drive more visitors and to also engage our residents too, because I think that's extremely important as well.
But give me a little more context. A 63% hotel occupancy rate, how does that compare to, say, what it was in 2012, you know, or even 2009, you know, 10 years ago?
I mean, sure.
Is this something that goes up and down, and is it variable having to do with the economy in general? I mean, we had a recession in 2008 and 2009. I can't imagine it was much higher in those 2 years.
Sure, absolutely. So it is a variable, and groups, you know, fluctuate from the East Coast of the country to the West Coast. If you're really doing well, you want to be in about the mid to high 70s in occupancy. That lets you know that things are rolling well. And 2012, 2013, we're in the high 60s, about 67, 68%. So we're tracking well. But again, our goal is to get back to that mid to high 70 range. Our hotel community, our restaurant community, my arts and cultural community, everyone wants those visitors coming. We have a great product here, and we have to continue to work at it. Partner with, to Kirby's point, the public safety side of things. We need to partner with our police department and others to continue to help that. That perception is still an issue, and we have to be real about it, and we want to help to fix it.
And Kirby Fowler, the primacy and the importance of downtown. I mean, when we talk about, mm-hmm. you know, so many of the challenged neighborhoods we have in our city, the west side, the east side, mm-hmm. but downtown remains important to all of Baltimore for what reasons?
Well, for several reasons. You could live in one section of the city and never venture to another section of the city your entire life. But everybody gets to downtown at one point or the other, whether it's for jury duty or to work or to go to the arena. So it's everybody's downtown. But also, just look at the development of downtown in terms of who we've been attracting. We've been attracting so many residents over the past 10, 20 years. And we've become the fastest growing neighborhood in the entire city and also one of its most diverse. So these good things are happening there. But also, it's the economic impact, Tom. It's the money that's generated, all the taxes that eventually go to the general fund and beyond. But everybody gets to, at one point, go to downtown and experience it. We continue to need to do more outreach in that respect, but everybody touches downtown. And every city has to have a thriving downtown in order to succeed. You do not have a city that survives with an ailing downtown.
When I moved here in 1982, downtown was all business. It was pretty small,
right. Yeah.
And it was office buildings. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock at night, it was a ghost town, right? Now, interestingly, to me at least, the census tract shows you that the highest residential growth we've had in the city, anywhere in the city, is downtown. People are starting to live there.
Sure.
So what's caused that turnaround?
Well, when I moved here, there was no skyscraper option, really, for living in the city at all. It was all about row homes, and still, if you ask people about living in Baltimore, they'd still say row homes. But we've had so many office buildings that have been renovated to residential or hotel. They have historic qualities to them that are appealing to people. Also, the transit connectivity is really important. But it's a factor of the assistance of the different public sector groups as well as the private sector. The private sector has to be interested in downtown in order for it to succeed, and it's hard at sometimes. It's hard to get a Starbucks to come to Calvert and Lombard. That's how hard it is for our city. But as you build more and more people come, and we're just so excited to have seen that transformation.
And Bishop Miles, I see a piece in the paper about the rebuilding of Bethlehem Baptist Church over in Sandtown, Winchester. They just consecrated the building a couple days ago. And your organization, Build, has a thing called Turnaround Tuesdays, which is a very successful program. I was speaking to one of your organizers about this just on Saturday, a young woman named Rachel Brand, who's here from Chicago, has only been here a couple of years, but she's thrown herself in with 2 feet, and she's terrific advocate for the work that Build is doing for the city in general and for this particular program. Explain to folks what happens on Turnaround Tuesdays.
Okay, before we get to that, I think I'd like to comment on what's been said. I think the downtown has been both a blessing and a curse to Baltimore in this respect, that Baltimore now is a city without vision, and that's what's crippling the city at its heart. The vision stopped with the development of the Inner Harbor. And since that time, there has been no cohesive vision that has brought all the segments of Baltimore together to strive for. And that's the curse part of what's happening now.
And who's obligated to have that vision? Is it just the person of the mayor, or is it a broader group?
Please don't get me started on mayors. The vision was not cast by any mayor. The vision was cast by the corporate community in conjunction with leaders of communities. That's what created the Inner Harbor. Black church buy-in, black community buy-in, and corporate community buy-in, dating back to Theodore McKeldin. I know Schaefer gets all the credit, but the vision was created before him, and it outlived him. But now there is no vision that's guiding the city. And where there's no vision, there's no strategy. So what we get are just programs that pop up here and there that are destined to fail because they're not tied to a strategic vision. And that's what's crippling Baltimore more than anything at this present time.
And you're not talking about just Mayor Pugh. You're talking about, because you've seen a whole bunch of mayors come and go in this town. So this, you're not limiting this to the current.
No mayor has had a vision beyond Schaefer, and Schaefer's vision was borrowed.
And back to Build and to Turnaround Tuesdays as an example of community organizers making an impact, helping the tax base, helping people get back on their feet, helping people get training that they need for jobs. Tell folks how that works.
It's a strategic vision that seeks to put basically ex-offenders in living wage jobs. What we've discovered is the best crime-fighting strategy is twofold. Community redevelopment, that's anchored in the community, and living wage employment, especially for those who are ex-offenders who find it most difficult finding jobs. Turnaround Tuesday was created as a vision of Pastor Marshall Prentice at Zion Church, who just went to the street corners and asked young men and women why they were standing on the street corners. And it was because they could not find employment. So Turnaround Tuesday, it was created to be a wraparound program that would, one, help people get jobs, and then provide wraparound services for 2 years to help them keep the jobs. In less than 2 years, 653 people have been put to work with an 83% retention rate. That's outstanding. Now we have
80%.
83%.
Wow. Fantastic.
Now we have employers coming to us seeking Turnaround Tuesday graduates because they've proven to be excellent employees.
Bishop Douglas Miles is one of the founding members and co-chair with the Reverend Andrew Foster Connors of BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development. Kirby Fowler is the president of the Downtown Baltimore Partnership, or the Downtown Partnership of Baltimore. I'm not quite sure what you guys call yourself.
The latter, but that's okay.
Yeah. Al Hutchinson is the president and CEO of Visit Baltimore. He handles tourism. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you are welcome to join us. Our phone number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. To send us a tweet at Midday, WYPR. To follow me on Twitter, at Tom Hall, WYPR. And you can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. We'll be right back. Stick around.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on our program tomorrow, Midday Culture Connections with Dr. Sherry Parks. We'll be talking about sex trafficking with our location on the I-95 corridor. Sex trafficking is a big problem for our region. So how can we stop it, and how can we best help victims? That's coming up tomorrow on Midday. If you're just joining us today, we're talking about what's wrong and what's right about Baltimore. Our launching point is a piece that ran in the New York Times Magazine a couple of weeks ago. You might have read it. It's called The Tragedy of Baltimore. So how does that narrative about our city, the narrative that we often find in national and local media, square with your experience living in the city and its environs? Give us a call at 410-662-8780. Drop us an email at midday@wypr.org. Send us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR and catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. Kelly pinged us on Facebook and said, "I respect your thoughtful conversation. I also wish there were at least one woman who would have been included on this panel." It's a fair point, Kelly. Melissa sends us a tweet. "Perhaps you could ask your guests to respond to the rapidly declining school population. Whatever the number of visitors, whatever the development of downtown, schools are shrinking. Can we have a robust city without schools as institutions?" So anybody want to take that one? And how do schools inform our understanding about the vision of the city, for example, Bishop Miles?
I've been around long enough to know when people in the county were lying about their address to get their children in city schools. City schools suffer because they've been underfunded for decades. And people can say anything they want about throwing money at the education problem. The truth is, money creates better school systems because you're able to hire staff. You don't have to go through mid-year reduction in forces because you're losing teachers. You're able to buy quality material and quality equipment. And Baltimore City schools have been historically underfunded since when I was in school. You know, at Dunbar High School, we got hand-me-down books from Western. That's how bad the schools were out of balance back then.
And of course, we've got Kerwin Commission recommendations calling for, you know, nearly $4 billion statewide.
And the truth of the matter is the city will not substantially grow unless the school system is brought up to par, because people will stay in the city until their children reach school age and then they'll exit.
Yeah.
So Tom, if I could just piggyback on Bishop's comment. I mean, obviously, education is extremely important. We have to continue to improve the Baltimore school system. That's a must. However, on the tourism side, I think one thing that we continue to talk about is career tracking, because in tourism, hospitality, there are great career opportunities that we want to expose our young folks to as an option. STEM is a great option for some students. guy like me couldn't have gone the STEM route. So we want to be able to talk to folks about opportunities in hospitality through our foundation. We're doing great work where we're providing grants and scholarships for young folks who want to matriculate into the hospitality space. I believe that's a huge opportunity for us to do more in the Baltimore public school system, and we want to do more. We're doing more now and reaching out to some of the school systems to let the students know about these opportunities, and we want to do more of that because I think that's another way for us to get the message out about the importance of what we do in tourism.
And Kirby Fowler, for example, Saturday night, a bunch of kids were down by the Inner Harbor. They were doing some stuff. They were messing around. Mm-hmm. Somebody called the police. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of them, evidently, a lot of kids. The police came. The flashers were flashing on the car, and the kids ran away. Mm-hmm. And that was it. Mm-hmm. End of story. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody got hurt. Nobody got arrested. No, nothing happened. Mm-hmm. You know? But there's this... That's another piece of kindling on the fire that says, you know, Baltimore, crime is out of control mm-hmm. in Baltimore. And of course, Alex's piece in the Times concentrated in large measure about the police response to crime since the death of Freddie Gray and the crime rate and how it's been unacceptable for these last 4 years. What should the narrative about crime be?
Well, I think it depends on your perspective. I know it depends on your perspective. So if you have somebody who's not used to an urban environment, they live in a rural area, they're going to have a far different opinion of what happens in a city. And so whenever I get a complaint about crime, I try to understand, so who is complaining and what are they complaining about? Oftentimes people refer to mugging when there hasn't been mugging. And you've got to dig deeper because there's a lot to unpackage when it comes to a person's perception and reporting of crime. Youth are entitled to be downtown. They're entitled to go to the mall, et cetera, but they're not entitled to, you know, act in criminal behavior. But people who are observing that, if they see kids, they just think they're acting out and there's something criminal happening about it. So we have to unpackage that over and over again because there's all these layers, how people view impoverished individuals, how people view people of different races. You have to unpack all of that. However, having said that, we did see crime numbers for violent crime go up last year for the first time in many years. So you've got to have both the youth outreach, but also the police presence. And the policing has to be done constitutionally. But also, you've got to have police to address some of the criminal issues and follow through.
And some of the crime stories that don't get reported or don't get reported widely, I mean, people don't obsess about them. Just last week, state marshals were called in by the governor to coordinate with the Baltimore City Police Department, and 264 people were arrested, 25 of whom were arrested on homicide charges. And the governor, Bishop Miles, is saying that in this thing he called Operation Seven Sentinels, has taken, you know, violent criminals off the streets. In terms of policing and in terms of how people perceive crime throughout the city, there is a big difference and a disparity between how people perceive crime in Sandtown or over by Dunbar High School on the east side and how they perceive it at the Inner Harbor.
I would beg to differ. I think that no one in this city likes crime, and no one in this city appreciates persons who act out in a criminal way. Often it's thought that persons in communities like Sandtown or over on East Baltimore want police presence gone. In actuality,
no,
they want better policing.
Yeah.
That's what's wanted is better policing. I think we're at a point now, and I think that's where the article in the Times was correct, that Baltimore's a city that right now that's wrestling with fear. And that fear, in large measure, is real for many people in the city. And that's caused by a dysfunctional police department, in large measure. And until our police department gets stabilized, gets to doing constitutional policing, I think that overarching fear is going to be there in the community. So that's on all of us. It's not just on the police. It's on those who reside in communities to be in cooperation with police when police are acting constitutionally. And I think that's the key.
Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of people have great high hopes for Commissioner Harrison, who's been on the job for less than 2 months now.
My prayer is that we don't look at Commissioner Harrison as a savior.
Right.
Saviors get crucified.
And you have long experience in that, sir. Yes, sir. Al Hutchinson, when you talk to folks who are thinking about bringing a convention of 2,000, 6,000 people to Baltimore, what are the things that interest them in the city in the first place, and what are the concerns they have when they talk to you? What are the things that they're bringing up that you need to respond to?
Majority of the folks that we talk with about coming to Baltimore, once they get to our city, they all say, wow, because the majority hadn't been here in years, or some had never been before. So what really gets their attention is the walkability of the downtown community, because most of our convention product is in the Central Business District, so with the convention center and hotel products and restaurants. So the walkability is extremely important to them. But I think one of the big stories now are the neighborhoods. Folks who travel and have a great experience in traveling, they want the authentic experience of destinations. So they want to see what's going on in Hamden, what's happening in Remington, what's going on in Mount Vernon. All the great neighborhoods, they want to see what's happening in the Pennsylvania Avenue corridor now that is picking up. So that is very important to a traveler, because it's not just about cookie cutter, what's your convention center or your hotels. They want to experience your city. So our folks now are telling us they want the same experience they get in the cities like the New Yorks and the Philadelphias. They want to experience the neighborhoods. Now, the reality is, what are folks hesitant about? What we've been talking about earlier, the perception of our city is a factor. And if you're traveling and you have a group of 5,000, 10,000 attendees, your job is to make sure your attendees feel comfortable and feel safe in a community. So the perception piece is one that we talk about a lot. We want to make sure our attendees feel good about coming into a city like Baltimore. Our message now is we're beginning to have stronger conversations with a public safety team. We have a public safety task force through our board, which Kirby is a part of. We met with Commissioner Harrison and other city leaders and community stakeholders. We want to have a broader conversation. I'm hopeful. Commissioner Harrison worked in New Orleans, which is a very similar tourism city to Baltimore. He's experienced some very similar things. So we want to have a broader conversation with him and his team to see where we can help with the perception issue. And storytelling is a part of what we need to do.
Got a bunch of emails and tweets. Susanna emails, and Kirby Fowler, I wanted you to respond to this. The conversation you're having focuses on visitors to and residents of the White L. This is something that people talk about all the time. The Black Butterfly, with its rich cultural history and heritage, is often left to languish until you stop focusing on the white, upwardly mobile residents who want to live in this corridor of what's known as the White L. We're not going to make progress. So it's obviously not an either-or thing,
right.
But what's your response to, and we have a couple of folks who are asking about that very thing.
Well, the first thing is people should understand that I am employed by the property owners in downtown, and that is basically my jurisdiction. But it doesn't just stop there. Downtown needs a thriving city and vice versa, and that's where we've conducted youth outreach, and we employ so many city residents now at a $15 minimum wage and beyond to help clean the streets of downtown and help out with security and hospitality. But beyond that, I think it's important to recognize what downtown is. It is 50% minority, 50% minority in terms of residents and also in terms of employment. So they might be talking about other parts of the city, but downtown is incredibly diverse, and the Baltimore Sun recognizes one of the most diverse neighborhoods in the entire city. So I'd be careful not to paint it with too broad a brush.
Let's go to the phones to James in Baltimore. James, welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I'm a retired correctional officer, and I noticed that most of the people that are being killed have criminal histories, and most of the people that are doing the killing have criminal histories. And the over-incarceration of people has caused the culture, the prison culture, to spill over into the dominant culture. And I think the solution lies inside our jails. We need to spend more resources. There needs to be like a tremendous expenditure of resources to change the prison culture so that the culture developed in prison could also spill back over into the dominant society. Until you change that culture, you will continue to have the murder rate, and you will continue to have other problems in the city.
Well, thanks for that call. I appreciate it. And Bishop Miles, this is exactly what the Turnaround Tuesday addresses, because you talk about formerly incarcerated people.
Yes. Returning citizens, as we call them.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a piece of the problem that we face, not just in Baltimore, but I think we face it nationwide, that since prisons are now privatized in many instances, there's money in keeping people locked up. And that operates to the detriment of the overall society. And that's another whole issue that perhaps you could have two or three shows on.
Yeah.
But I would like to address that. I think it would have been even a better show if there were more representatives of the neighborhoods on this broadcast. For instance, there's good work going on in Johnston Square, in Oliver that's being rebuilt, in Greenmount West that's being rebuilt, that could provide places that visitors could visit when they're here. Also, the lack of a black cultural hub, the fact that Pennsylvania Avenue was allowed to deteriorate to nothing. And under several mayors, we have pushed that corridor be reactivated in terms of making it the cultural hub again of the African-American community. And it's always fallen on deaf ears. Mm-hmm.
And so, Leaders for a Beautiful Struggle, for example, yes. is doing that very thing mm-hmm. now. I mean, the Harris Marcus Building and the Sphinx Club mm-hmm. and the various institutions that have, you know, fallen by the wayside are now, I mean, they in particular are making a specific effort to revitalize
and
those.
Tom, if I could just add to that just recently Visit Baltimore has partnered with the Pennsylvania Avenue Arts and Entertainment mm-hmm. District. We supported the resolution. We're going to work very closely with that corridor to build that up because, to your point, Bishop, Pennsylvania Avenue should be rebuilt. It was a historical gem in this city. It's iconic. We want visitors to go to that corridor. So our job at Visit Baltimore, a little different than Kirby's, is we want visitors to go to all the neighborhoods. So that's why just recently we rehanced our website to really talk about the beauty of the neighborhoods. We want people to visit neighborhoods. We had only 16 neighborhoods we were highlighting. Now we're up to about a little more than 40. We want to continue to add that messaging because we think that's extremely important in our messaging. And just today, we rolled out a new campaign called Meet the Makers. And what that campaign is about is really to push not only visitors, but residents to the neighborhood so we can meet folks that are making things here in Baltimore. So we just put that on our website today, so I encourage your listeners to go to it.
And one of the great hubs for making is the Open Works, which is over on the west side. It's over by Greenmount mm-hmm. Cemetery.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you have, you know, from Union.
I'm sorry, the east side. Excuse me. Yeah. I got my compass wrong here. Excuse me.
It's Greenmount West, yeah, but it's
yeah,
east side.
Yeah. Right, well, exactly.
We have folks here like Natasha Just Brittle and B. Willow, Drama Mama Bookshop, Union Craft Brewing, all this great activities happening right here in Baltimore. Our maker scene is something we can own as a community, and I think it's on us to really celebrate that, tell that story. We want people, all people, to go to all of Baltimore, not one part of Baltimore, but we need to be ready for the visitors as well. So we're about infrastructure development. I think it's incumbent upon the city to help us to build up these neighborhoods.
That is Al Hutchinson. He is the CEO of Visit Baltimore. Kirby Fowler of the Downtown Partnership of Baltimore is here, as is Bishop Douglas Miles of the Koinonia Baptist Church and Build. We're going to take a little break, but before we take that break, a note about an event that's taking place tonight to protest violence in Baltimore City. A community organization called Hug Don't Shoot is organizing Hands Across Baltimore. They hope to have people join hands on North Avenue from Hilton Parkway on the west end of North Avenue across to Milton Avenue on the east side of North Avenue. We've got a link to more information on the Midday website. We're talking about Baltimore, and as it turns out, on Mondays here on Midday, it is our practice to read the names of the people who have lost their lives to violence in the previous week. We do so to stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 70 people in our city have lost their lives to violence. Last week, police released the identities of 3 victims of homicides whose deaths were first reported the week before last. Their names are Anthony Grandison, age 40, Giovanno Johnson, age 22, and Donta Davis, age 19. Last week, six people lost their lives to violence. Police have released the identities of two of them. They are Quentin Rogers, age 31, and Deshaun McCoy. He was 26 years old. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the New York Times Magazine piece called The Tragedy of Baltimore, which was published 2 weeks ago. We had its author, the well-respected journalist and longtime Baltimore resident Alec McGinnis, on the show on the 21st of March. Today, we're hearing from a few civic leaders to get their perspective. Al Hutchinson is the president and CEO of Visit Baltimore. He's in charge of boosting tourism in the city. Kirby Fowler is the president of the Downtown Partnership of Baltimore. He works with visitors, residents, and businesses to improve the experience of the city in a variety of ways. And Bishop Douglas Miles is a co-founder and co-chair of BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development. Our phone number here at midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, to send us a tweet at midday, WYPR, and to find us on Facebook, come to the WYPR Facebook page. We are streaming our conversation there. Kirby Fowler, to the extent that media, both in particular national media, can sort of dictate the narrative about the city, a lot of folks said, you know, in Alec McGillis's piece, he didn't mention this, he didn't mention that. He wasn't sent out to mention a lot of things. Right. He was setting out to do a thing basically about the police department. But to the extent that the national media can dictate a narrative for folks who, you know, have interaction with Al Hutchinson and visit Baltimore, what are ways of changing that perception? Before Alec McGillis's piece, it was The Wire with David Simon.
Well, first, if I could say, Alec McGillis, if he wrote an 8,000-word essay on a love letter about Baltimore, I don't think the New York Times would have published it. And I know Alec McGillis. We follow each other on Twitter. He says a lot of positive things about Baltimore. But the New York Times will not post something like that or publish something like that. Negative is more credible than positive, and it's very frustrating. If you think in 2013 and 2014, for the first time in decades, six decades, we had net residential growth in our city. Did the New York Times write about that? No, they did not. It's hard to find a positive article about Baltimore City in this national press. But how do you turn that around? Working with Al and other groups, there's not much in terms of marketing dollars out there. So we're doing what we can with the money we got. Social media, thankfully, doesn't cost all that much. It requires you have great employees who are great writers, and we have those quite a few of those employees. But also, I think that it'd be wonderful if there was a TV show that could show other parts of Baltimore as well. The Wire was really well done, but it was just one side of Baltimore. If you look at how New York City turned around, in my opinion, I think New York City turned around more because of Seinfeld, Sex and the City, and Friends. Those shows actually, especially Sex and the City, because that was filmed. You could actually see women walking in and out of department stores or retail stores, and that changed the impression. So I think it's important to have a few different versions of what's happening here.
Well, and in fairness to the New York Times, all the news is fit to print. On the 26th of March, they did publish an article about how Baltimore is a cultural beacon. They mentioned people like John Waters, David Simon, Ann Tyler, Joyce Scott, folks like that.
But the headline was, it persists in Baltimore. Culture persists in Baltimore. So it's snarky. I mean, it comes from, I think, first ignorance about Baltimore and then some condescension. And again, I lived in New York City, so maybe I'm allowed to say this. But there's the condescension. And then also, I think, listen, it's hard. I'm not an African-American, but I know an African-American person has to work harder than others to help their reputation just personally. Why isn't that true of a city, too? And I think there's some racism that just applies to the national press and how they treat our city. We've got so many good things happening here, but of course, I think our city has to work harder than other cities because we're African-American majority city. And I think it's incredibly unfair.
Al Hutchinson, who's coming to Baltimore? I mean, is in terms of visitors to our city, is it all conventions and, you know, these large groups and stuff, or is it people who have family here? I mean, do you track who the actual folks are, who the people are who are deciding to come and to visit?
We do track it, and last year, 26 million visitors came, and I say visitors, capital V, so that includes meetings and convention folks. That includes a family coming to Baltimore just for the day. That's a part of that 26 million. What we do know by data that out of those 26 million, 54% of them come to Baltimore area to visit family and friends.
And so more than half.
More than half. So mm-hmm. What the importance of that is that that's why our county residents should be our fans, because we know their family members, their friends are coming to see them in Howard County and Baltimore County and Anne Arundel, and they need to be celebrating everything that Baltimore has to offer, because their folks are coming to see them. They need to be on our team. And I think it's important for us to celebrate that and tell the story of all the greatness that's happening in the community. And we need to rally our friends in the county to come see us and to also support this great city.
And Bishop Miles, now that people have sort of the capacity to instantly transmit information about this is happening on my street, there's this organization or a website called Nextdoor, and you can sign up for it, you know, as part of your neighborhood, and it'll tell you what's going on, both the good and the bad, the good, bad, and ugly. There's a lot more information flowing left, right, north, south, east, and west. How do you, from your perspective as a person who's just, you know, seen so much happen in our city over these many years, how do you think that's informing people's perception of what's going on? And is there a disconnect between the perception of what the city really is experiencing and the reality?
I think it's both. That there's some that's perception and some that's reality. But again, I think the thing that the city at this time needs to focus on is a twofold project. One, creating a vision for the city, and that vision can only be created as people from various parts of the city are in conversation. Even during the heights of legalized Jim Crow in the city, there were conversations between the African American and white community. Those lines have broken down completely. There were conversations between the corporate community and the neighborhoods uptown. Those lines have broken down. We need to restart conversation around creating a new vision and a strategy to make that vision real.
And who can facilitate that conversation?
I challenge the 900-pound gorilla in the city, and that's Johns Hopkins, to call together the corporate leaders and say, you must sit with other leaders of this city from the various communities, and we together must come up with a vision that all of us can buy into that represents the entire city and not one segment of the city, and a vision that we can all work toward to make happen.
And Kirby Fowler, when it comes to development, as you mentioned, you know, your organization, mm-hmm. you're hired by the folks who live and own businesses mm-hmm. downtown. Obviously, when it comes to development in places like Remington, Hamden, mm-hmm. Harbor East, the places where we see all the cranes and we see right. all the building going on, are those developments, can they serve as paradigms and as models for development in Sandtown and on the east side and in Oliver and Cherry Hill? I mean, or is it there's certainly not a one-size-fits-all when it comes to development, but what have we learned in these largely white neighborhoods which have seen a lot of progress over the last 5-10 years? What do we learn there that we can also apply to other places in the city?
Well, it is a little tough because a lot of private sector money has to be driven to these neighborhoods, and banks have to be supportive of those neighborhoods. And there's when the banks are mostly majority run, it's hard to convince those banks and others to invest in some other neighborhoods. And we have a tough time drawing even retailers, national retailers beyond downtown, even within downtown. So it's a struggle in those neighborhoods because of some of these institutional issues with racism and poverty. However, there are programs that you work with the city and state, and there have been strong programs for facade improvement, for retail development. That's the small businesses are the backbone of our city, and certainly Pennsylvania Avenue, Greenmount West, and all these other neighborhoods have that potential. But if the money is controlled by others nationally, we're still going to have a challenge.
And Al Hutchinson, when it comes to, you know, if you had a larger PR advertising budget, what would you spend it on? What would you What is the story that you would want to tell more widely to people in terms of visiting the city who aren't living here but would come as a for a variety of other reasons?
Well, I'm going to go back to the question posed to Kirby about national advertising or national storytelling. We need to come together, to Bishop Miles' point, as a community and tell a broader Baltimore story nationally. We've never done that before in a positive way, and it's going to take resources to make it happen, but I think we have a huge opportunity because a number of entities are struggling, whether it's in the corporate sector trying to recruit the hotshot to come to Baltimore, or mommy and daddy looking at coming, sending their child to school here in Baltimore, or we're getting a tourism conference, or Kirby trying to relocate a business to Baltimore. The stars are lined up in a sort of negative way where perception is a challenge. We can overcome it with resources and tell a story of all the great things all of us know about as a city that has its complexities, has its challenges, but still growing, and ask America to help rebuild Baltimore too, like they did Detroit, like they did New Orleans. We've never asked America to help us. And I think we have a huge opportunity and showcase all the greatness we know, but the family in California, the family in Illinois doesn't know what we know. But they're looking for that gem in America that they never heard about. And I think that's Baltimore.
What do you think, Bishop Miles?
I refer back to the movie Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come. What we've discovered is if you build affordable, good housing, people will return to the city. That's what we've done. We've done in Oliver, and that's what needs to be replicated across the city in terms of those communities that have gone by the wayside. Build affordable, good housing, and young families will return to the city. And that's the hope of Baltimore is attracting young citizens back to the city to make this city more diverse, to make this city stronger economically, and that points to a brighter future.
So, Kirby Fowler, how should these conversations and how should, people's reactions to what the New York Times is writing, both good and bad, inform public policy in terms of transportation, in terms of criminal justice, in terms of affordable housing, as Bishop Miles mentioned? I mean, what can we learn? What should we take away?
Well, to agree with Bishop Miles, our affordability is one of our great assets. And I think if we can draw in the middle class, which we've lost in droves, if we continue to rebuild neighborhoods block by block, I think we can get it together. But the affordability is amazing. Plus also, we are, I think, there's a lot we need to do in our city, but I think we're fairly good at acknowledging our faults. We see that over and over again. But I think if we can get together and I think join the forces with the corporate sector. I agree. As strong as the corporate sector is now, we have a lot of out-of-town banks now. Back in the 60s, it was a lot of homegrown institutions that could get together with a governor or a mayor. But I think all those things could work together.
And Al Hutchinson, you've been in town how long now?
Almost 3 years.
Yeah. So you're the newbie on the block, right, as it were. What have you learned about the city of Baltimore in the 3 years that you've been here?
Well, again, this is my sixth city doing this past 27 years selling cities. I can tell you Baltimore has more assets than any city I've ever been a part of. The most special part about Baltimore is the passion of the people. They love this community. Regardless of the scars, the warts of it, they love Baltimore. That's special because a lot of communities don't have that passion and that love. I think we can take that to help continue to focus on our challenges, but also we should focus on the goodness too and celebrate where we can go. Slavery didn't stop us. Civil rights didn't stop us. Jim Crow didn't stop us. This issue in Baltimore is something we can fix, but to the bishop's point, we got to do it together. Can't do it in silo. That won't work. But if we come together, I think this is one of the most special cities in this country.
We're going to have to leave it there, and I'm very grateful to all of you for being here with us this afternoon. I should mention that Alec McGillis did call, and I made the decision. This is on me, not on our producer or our engineer. I made the decision not to take his call. We did speak to Alec at length a couple of weeks ago. We will speak to Alec again and continue to get his very erudite perspective. But I made the call not to do that today. But I appreciate you guys being here. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Kirby Fowler is the president of the Downtown Partnership of Baltimore. Bishop Douglas Miles is a co-founder and the co-chair of Build Baltimore United. Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development. Al Hutchinson is the president and CEO of Visit Baltimore. That is it for us today. Coming up tomorrow on our program, it's Midday Culture Connections with Dr. Sherry Parks. We'll talk about sex trafficking, why it's such a big problem in this region, and what can be done to stop it. That's coming up tomorrow on Midday. We want to thank the Diz for supplying lunch today. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends. You can find them on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. I'm Tom Hall. Here and Now is coming up next after a break for news at the top of the hour. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.